Now we have Rick Ankiel with us. He's the former Cardinal pitcher and outfielder, and I'm sure many of you know his stories. The title of his book is The Phenomenon, Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life. The synopsis of his story is familiar to Cardinal fans and many more. He joined the Cardinals in the late 90s as a pitcher, expected to be the next Bob Gibson or Sandy Koufax. He was fulfilling that promise until 2001, when his pitching became so conspicuously and wildly erratic that he went back to the minor leagues, gave up as a pitcher, and surprised the baseball world when he came back a couple of years later as an accomplished outfielder. Rick Ankiel joins us in studio. You know, that's a synopsis of your story. There's a whole lot more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more layers in there, which, you know, if you pick up the book, you'll see. I try to be very open about it. I thought it was important to tell the story. And just to be honest and open, you know, even from my childhood and moving on through into my career.
Why did you feel it necessary to write this book, Rick?
You know, I got a lot of offers to write a book when I was still in uniform, and I got an offer to make a movie, and I just, you know, I didn't think the timing was right. I knew that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to open up and reveal what I was going through, especially with the throwing stuff. You know, it's just very personal. And there's no way I could have been that openly, just open about it in general. You know, and the thing is, when I was going through the throwing stuff, you know, I couldn't find literature on it. Nobody wanted to talk about it. It gets dark. It's ugly. Well, I've made it to the other side of it, and I realized that other people go through the same thing. I remember getting a ton of letters from people and from different walks of life, whether it be a writer or announcer or field goal kicker or you name it. I mean, people just saying, hey, I've been through something similar. And I realized that I can help people. So the timing was right. The timing was right, and here we are.
It was catharsis then for you, kind of get it all out of your system?
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I never talked about it with the media when I was going through it. And now I'm not afraid of it. You know, it doesn't bother me to talk about it, and understanding that I can help other people with my voice and telling my story. It's been rewarding so far. It's only been out since Tuesday, but I've had a ton of people come up to me and say, thank you. You know, I went through something similar, and it's helped me to hear your story.
You know, it's surprising, and it may surprise a lot of people to learn that others have gone through the same sort of thing that you did, maybe not with as much publicity, but you talked about Steve Blass, for instance, former mm-hmm. Pittsburgh pitcher. He went through exactly the same thing.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, we sat down and had that conversation about it, and it's, you know, it's so similar. And, you know, that's the thing. I understand what he went through. He understands what I went through. And, you know, the thing about it is, even people that have been in baseball for a long time, unless you've actually been through it or had it happen to you, I don't think many people understand what it's actually all about.
I'm trying to remember the name of I think it was the Yankees second baseman. Was it Knobloch? Was that his name?
Chuck Knobloch.
Yeah, Knobloch.
Mackie Sasser. Yeah.
He could not make the throw from second base to first base.
Right. And, you know, the thing about it is, in the most notable now, I would say, is John Lester for the Cubs, and he can't throw it to first, but he can throw it home. And you know, it's funny because it does seem to appear more in the infield with pitchers, whether it be a pitcher or an infielder or a catcher that can't throw it back to the pitcher. It's always that throw where you're kind of slowing down through your release point, that soft throw. It seems like whether people, you know, for John Lester, for example, when he's throwing it as hard as he can, he's fine. Yeah. But to slow down and try to throw it easy to first, he can't do it. And that seems to be where it appears the most.
You know, you have a line in your book that you were asked to throw out a ceremonial first pitch in a baseball game. And you said it would be okay if I could throw it from center field.
Yeah, we had a good – that was Joe Pfeiffer, who worked for the Cardinals. He called me. We had a good laugh about that. And, you know, I threw out the first pitch Tuesday. It's funny because they're like, hey, do you want to throw it from center? And although it's funny, I felt like, you know, it's kind of gimmicky, and now we're turning it into a circus, and I'd rather just throw it from the mound. And frankly, I could care less if I threw it away or not.
Oh, really? I mean, I would think that, you know, you talk about all of this. Pressure is a part of all of this, and mm-hmm. that's part of your life now, helping other people deal with that. But I would think there'd be as much pressure on making that pitch the other night at Busch Stadium than anything else you've done.
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's not my livelihood anymore.
Yeah.
And I've been through it. And I came back and pitched successfully in 04 and then moved on to be an outfielder. I mean, it's no secret that I don't like throwing it from that distance. It's not, what is it going to do to me if I throw it off the backstop? I actually thought about throwing it off the backstop on purpose. I would have probably got more publicity and sold more books. But at the same time, now you're turning into a circus. I'm there. I'm a friend with a lot of those players still, and the manager, and I don't want to turn this into anything other than being out there, and it's an honor to go out there and bring my kids out there and throw out the first pitch. And, you know, those guys need to get ready for a game. I don't need to be out there creating a controversy and throwing stuff all over.
Oh, it must have been tempting. It must have been tempting. You know, another thing about the book that strikes me is the loyalty that the Cardinals had to Rick Angio. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was really quite extraordinary. In today's baseball, the business that it is, that they really wanted to hang on to you and help you.
Yeah, there's no question about it. They, you know, if it would have happened with another organization, who knows where this would have went. Maybe they don't give me the opportunity to come in and be an outfielder. And, you know, I have to be so thankful, not only them, but the fans and everybody that supported me here. I mean, obviously, I understand how important baseball is in St. Louis. And, you know, that's one of the things that I fell in love with when I got here was the tradition and the history and how important it is to the city.
You know, there's more to the story than just baseball. Part of your story is your upbringing, mm-hmm. the problems with your dad, an abusive situation. Do you think that had anything to do with what afflicted you on the ball field?
I don't. You know, for me, and I've been asked that a lot, you know, for me, well, then how do you explain all the in-between when I was so good? Mm-hmm. You know, wouldn't it just have showed up immediately? You know, it's just one of those tough things that's unfortunate to go through as a child. And I feel like my job as a father is to break that cycle and make sure that, you know, my kids have a happy and loving home and, you know, they're able to, or I want to be able to help them to be able to fulfill their dreams and do whatever they want to do in life.
Declan and Riker, right? Those
Correct.
Are your
yes.
two boys. How old are they now?
4 and 6.
Oh, well, they're a little too young still to kind of catch on to what's been going on in your life.
Yeah, they are, and they weren't old enough to see me play, and that's why it was so neat and cool for me to be able to take them out on the mound on Tuesday and throw out that first pitch with them out there, especially here at Busch Stadium and here in St. Louis. It's something that I'll cherish forever.
How are you going to approach your story with them when they get older? Just give them the book, or how are you going to deal with
it? No, I mean, I'm sure they'll start asking. You know, part of the reason to write in the book is it's their story, too, and I want them to have something to be able to hold on to and read and understand. If anything, I hope that this book and my story for them is a learning lesson on, you know, sometimes life doesn't go as expected. We get thrown curveballs, and it's about waking up and keep moving forward and keep following your dreams. And, you know, dreams do come true. You got to stick with it.
During the course that you were having this trouble, these demons that were afflicting you, how do you think the media handled it?
I felt like they were cruel. You know,
cruel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, let's be honest, it's a better story if I'm throwing balls off the backstop and creating that for them. And not that, you know, that next year it happened in 2001, the first time in the playoffs. That next year following, when you spin around to 2001, I couldn't even play catch in the outfield without 30 camera crews out there trying to film mm-hmm. me and whatever. And, you know, it's really hard to, I'm trying to figure this out. I have no idea really what's going on, but I'm trying to get better and figure it out. So it's hard enough on its own, let alone when you have 30 camera crews following you around all day waiting for you to throw one away or anything else. And it just made the pressure that much more intense. You know, hopefully part of the book awareness, too, is, you know, that the media maybe can hopefully understand how dark this is for other players. And when somebody's going through it, give them a chance to breathe and get through it.
You know, I think some members of the media might be tempted to say, you know, that's part of the price you have to pay for celebrity. Ball players make a lot of money. And, you know, it's a story. It's a story.
Understood. But a slump's one thing. Right? A slump is one thing. And hey, you document that all you want and ask me about it all you want. But this is completely different. And understood, too, that they have a job to do. But, you know, I had to understand, too, that I was trying to get through something really tough. And I had just to agree to disagree with them.
We've talked a little bit about what was going on. And I guess you have some sense of what might have been happening in terms of release point of the ball. But have you ever totally figured out what the heck happened?
No, I don't think we're ever going to be able to figure out a why. And, you know, there's not even a scientific name for what happens. There's 4 or 5 of them, right? We still haven't even figured that out.
A couple of the names have your name attached to it.
Right.
And Steve Blass's as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but it the biggest thing about it is that it consumes you. You know, here I am at 21 years old, and I'm living the life I've always wanted and I've always worked for and in the big leagues, and things are going as good as they possibly can. I pitched well enough to start game one of the playoffs against Greg Maddux, and the next thing I know, I can't play catch with a guy 60 feet in front of me. And that just consumes you. It's your livelihood. It's everything you've ever worked for, and now you can't do it. I mean, it is so, so tough.
We are talking with Rick Ankiel. He is the author of The Phenomenon, Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life. I think most people who are baseball fans in St. Louis, and even those who are not baseball fans necessarily, know your story, Rick Ankiel. You're spending time now, I think this is still happening, working with the Washington team with regard to some of their players?
No, I did that in 15, but once you, if you go to TV, it's a conflict of interest, so they don't let you do both.
But you are doing Fox Sports Midwest.
Correct.
Let me just back up to that time then when you were working with ballplayers on dealing with pressure. Basically, how'd you do that?
You know, I try to share my experiences with them and what I went through on and off the field and let them understand or help them understand about pressure and expectations, especially with young ball players. You know, sometimes their expectations are a lot higher than they should be. And you know, most of them, whether they're just coming from high school or college, they've dominated all the way through. And now they get to a level in pro ball where the playing field is level now, you know, and in a lot of cases better than they are. And they're not used to that. And all of a sudden their head starts to spin and you know, another big thing for them is social media now, which is tough because now everybody's all over it and that's the biggest thing. And you know, it's a broad question, but really you come in and say, hey, what's bothering you? And let's talk about it. And whatever they have to say, we jump into it.
And social media is one of the things the issues that they're raising?
You know, it's just a different animal and a different beast now. I mean, you have such access to things so fast. I mean, you really have to tell them to think before you just put anything out there. You know what I mean? I mean, kids are so fast to just put their opinion out there, whether they're going to understand the consequences or not. And they have to understand, you know, now you play for an organization. You're representing the organization. You can't just do whatever you want to do or what your friends are doing at home online. This is going to stick with you and could possibly hurt your career, especially when you talk about pictures and all other things that they could put on there that could be damaging to their reputation.
How do the players, your peers, your contemporaries, the guys that you were playing with during the first part of this century, how were they reacting to what was going on?
You know, I think it was hard for everybody. You know, if you'd have known me before this happened, I think I was the guy that you would have said this will never happen to. The other thing I can understand is that it's probably frightening for him because at the same time now it's like, you know, this is real. You know, maybe I've heard about it and haven't seen it, but now it's in front of them and now they have to start thinking about, wow, I hope this doesn't happen to me. There's a lot of things that go into that. You know, the other thing is, you know, in a clubhouse, those guys become your second family. You're around them more than you are your real family. And, you know, it's one of those situations where everybody wants to help, but I don't, you know, they don't know how to help, but they want to put their arm around you, but they're not sure how to. And it's tough for everybody because if you see somebody struggling and going through something that you can't help them, it's somebody that you care about, that's a hard thing for you too.
One of the things that you did to cope with all of this was you self-medicated. You got yourself into a little bit of a jam that way too, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, I keep mentioning that it consumes you. And whether I'm like, you know, my normal routine would be go home and watch more baseball because I like baseball. Well, now all of a sudden I turn on the TV and now I'm watching somebody else throw and I'm thinking, man, why can't I throw like that? Or maybe I'll go try his mechanics. It seems to be working for him. And it's just a revolving door that never stops. And, you know, to cope, you know, I was just trying to find ways to distract myself for a few hours so I didn't have to think about it. And so it'd leave me alone.
So the vodka bottle came into play.
The vodka bottle was in 2001. So my first start of that season, you know, I started against Randy Johnson in Arizona, and I didn't know this was going to happen. I didn't plan on it, but you know, a couple weeks before that start, somebody said, "Hey, maybe you should just try pitching buzzed. Maybe that'll help." And I blew it off, like, "Yeah, haha, whatever." But leading up to that day, the day of that start. Waiting, you know, at the hotel before the game, I get to the field and just, I knew it wasn't going to go well. I knew I had no chance. I knew I was going to go out there and be bouncing balls and throwing balls off the backstop in front of the entire world. And that's a hard thing to deal with. And Daryl Kyle, who was on the team and my mentor, you know, I went to him privately and said, man, I'm not going to be able to pitch today. I don't know what to do. You know what? Go get me a bottle of vodka and put it in a water bottle. And he said, you know what? Okay. I understand. And I tried it, and I pitched like that, and it worked. And I beat Randy Johnson, and, you know, although I'm not proud of it, I mean, you know, I'm sitting in the dugout in between innings, maybe during the third inning, and I could feel the anxiety and those nerves trying to overcome the alcohol. And I just remember thinking to myself, man, this is crazy. I got to do this. But I did win, and it worked. So, of course, I tried it the next game. But you know, those feelings and that power, the monster is so powerful that it just overcame it. And the alcohol didn't work, and that was the end of that.
Was there anybody you could turn to, during this particular time that could be helpful to you?
I had Harvey Dorfman, who was a sports psychologist and worked for my agent, Scott Boris, in my corner, helping me try to cope and deal with this. And I'm so thankful for him being in my life and really helping me figure it out. And I told him too after the game, hey, you know, I had a drink before that game, and he says, look, I understand, but you know, you got to know it's not real, and you're gonna have to face the music at some time. And damn it, if he isn't always right, that next game, it wasn't real, and it came right through it. And you know, I just had to face it head on.
Harvey and Boris were really instrumental, kind of secretly plotting your return to the game, weren't they?
They were. I guess towards the end of 04 there, and then into 05, they had already, I didn't learn this till a few years back. I didn't know at the time. But I guess they had spoke with the Cardinals and said, you know, if Rick ever comes to a point where he doesn't want to pitch anymore, I think he can hit. And then, you know, that day came in 2005 when I went in and told Tony La Russa, hey, I can't do this anymore. You know, it's not healthy. I don't foresee this being any type of future that I want to be a part of. And I went home, and I was done pitching, and I'm at home. Not even for an hour, and my phone's ringing, and it's Scott Boris, and I pick up the phone, and he's like, hey, are you ready? First, he's like, hey, you all right? And I'm like, yeah, everything's good. He's like, well, are you ready to go play? I say, play what? There's nobody listening to me. I just quit pitching. I just retired. He's like, play baseball, be an outfielder. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I was kind of getting agitated with him. Like, what are you talking about, you know? And he said, you know, do you want to be an outfielder? And I'm like, I don't know. I just fell out of love with the game. I need some time to think about this. I hang up. 4 hours later, after sitting there and trying to visualize what this was going to be and what it's going to look like and what I thought it would feel like, you know, I pictured myself making it back to the big leagues and hitting a home run as a position player. And once I got that vision in my mind, I picked up the phone, called him, and I said, heck yeah, I'm in. He says, let me call the Cardinals and ask. So he calls Walt Jocketty. Walt Jocketty calls me back and he says, hey, we're 100% on board. Show up tomorrow and you're an outfielder.
And how long did it take? A couple of years, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, that first year went pretty good. I think I was in the 270s somewhere, hit 21 homers. That next spring training when I came in, man, I was surprising myself. I mean, I was covering all off-speed pitches. It was just, you know, I felt like I had it. I was really going into something. And unfortunately, in that spring training, I blew out my knee. And I had to sit that year out. But the one thing it did was it opened my eyes because I was hitting. So, I mean, I had the good first year. But in that spring training, the way I was hitting in that spring training, I knew that, hey, this is – I'm gonna make it back to the big leagues as an outfielder.
When you were handling that phone call with regard to coming back as an outfielder, your girlfriend at the time had just been told by you that you were through.
Yeah.
And tell us about the reaction when you talked to her a little while later and said, no, I'm not through.
she was like, hey, whatever it takes to be happy. And I said, well, but, you know, I'm going to come back an outfielder. And I remember she was like, well, can you hit? I remember laughing, thinking, girl, try me like that. Of course I can hit. So, you know, it's fun that she became my wife. You know,
I was going to say she's been with you ever since.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, she'll always say, hey, I met a pitcher, but I married an outfielder. And it's fun, you know, because she got to see, she got to see it all transpire.
She didn't see the early days, the days in the first part. What has her response to that been? I mean, she probably looks at you from time to time and said, what the heck was going on in that handsome young man's face head?
You know, she's never really done anything but support me. You know what I mean? Of course I've talked about it and told her, and she just listens, you know, she just listens. I don't know if there's much to be said, you know, other than, you know, I understand, what you went through and how hard that must have been. And I'm proud of you also for where you've gotten to.
Boy, it doesn't hurt to have that kind of support.
No.
I have a note here that our producer has sent me saying some quotes from ballplayers saying they want to read your book. They're interested in reading your book and are excited to read your book, but they're going to wait until they retire.
I understand that 100%. And you brought it up earlier, you know, what do you think my teammates were thinking when I went through it? And I said, you know, I think it's frightening for them. And that's the thing. It's kind of this taboo thing that's never talked about. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to see it because there's a possibility it can happen to anybody.
Yeah. But we do know it's not a contagious disease. So at least we hope it's not.
Right.
okay, you're on the precipice now of a whole new life. Is broadcasting something, do you think there is going to be a big part of your future, doing what, a dozen games or so this year for Fox?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like it to be. I certainly like it, and, you know, I'm the only guy out there who can say I pitched and hit in the big leagues, and so I can bring that perspective to the table. So I think it would be neat. It'd be fun. I like it. You know, one of the things, too, family-wise, is that when I'm not at home and I'm on the road, they can turn on the TV and see and hear me. So I think it works good. It works good in that regards.
Yeah. 12 games. Do you have any prospects of doing more than that, maybe even this year or going on in the future?
I'd love to do more. But, you know, that's not my call. And I've let them know I'd love to do more. So it's just about the scheduling and Fox and what they want to do.
Yeah. What else do you do? I mean, when you're not doing that these days, what is your life like?
Well, I have a 4 and 6 year old, as we mentioned, and that takes up a lot of my time there. We're into T-ball, soccer, and starting karate soon. So,
you know, I'm reminded, and you're still a young man. You're under 40. You're in great shape. You look like you're really in the prime of life. And I think of a quote from Johnny Bench, Hall of Fame catcher for the Cincinnati Reds, obviously. And he retired, I think he was 35 when he retired. And he said, "I'm happy to be retiring so that I can be a young man once again."
Well, I understand what he means. I mean, you know, you take a toll being out there every day, 162 games in a row, and, you know, it's a lot, but obviously it's completely worth it. Everybody who's done it, you know, everybody who makes it to the big leagues, that's their dream, and that's a fun thing about it. You're getting a chance and an opportunity to live out your dream.
You look to be in great shape. Do you ever think when you get up in the morning, boy, I could go out there and I could play today?
There's definitely times when I watch a pitcher on TV and I think, man, I'd really love to face this guy. But, you know, I miss the competition and I miss being around the guys. But, you know, it's a year-round job, you know, 24/7. And I don't miss all the traveling and that. I don't want to miss my kids growing up. And, you know, as time goes, I know my role now is better being a father and moving on into my next career.
And that next career might very well be in the broadcast booth. How are you physically? I mean, as I say, you look to be in great shape. Mm-hmm. You've got some scars in your body from surgeries.
I do. I just had hip surgery in November. I hope, knock on wood, this is my last one, hopefully for a while anyway. Other than that, everything's great. I feel good. And, you know, as you said, I still try to get in the gym and work out and make sure I can still be in shape when my kids get old enough and I got to chase them around.
Get out the old wiffle ball and bat. I'm sure you already have with kids of that age. A lot of fun. Rick Ankiel, thank you so much for being with us. Best of luck in your new career and with the book, The Phenomenon. Rick Ankiel's book, Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life.
Thank you.
Great to meet you. Thanks. You so much for being with us. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.